This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. As always, I am Kathy, and Rick is here with me, too. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. That sounded like a very radio-y kind of introduction. Like, you know, you have a good radio voice there.
I started my career in radio.
I did not know that.
I hated it. It was not what I thought it would be. I went to school for broadcast journalism, didn't ever really want to do television, wanted to do radio news, got into radio in a major market and realized there was no real news anymore. It was just ripping off the AP wire and reading it to people. And it was not an incredibly lucrative job, paid less than print journalism, if you can believe it, and just wasn't for me. But thank you.
So I'm the one at a disadvantage because I don't have a radio background and talking is always an effort for me.
But you speak so well.
It's a struggle. It's a definite struggle for me. And I'm not as quick as I used to be. As I get older, I find that I struggle to put the words together. But thank you. And I'm ready to rock this morning.
Are you ready to rock? So a funny thing happened to me 2 weeks ago. I had, I own this weekly newspaper, my husband and I do, and we have an annual Florida Media Conference. And I made the hotel reservations for staff. I registered for the conference. I did this months ago. And I told them all it was in Naples. So the three of us get in my truck to drive down to Naples, and I put the directions in, and it says Charlotte Harbor. And I went, man, did I make hotel reservations, this moment of panic. Did I make hotel reservations at the wrong hotel? Like, crap, you know, Charlotte Harbor is not close to Naples. I mean, that's an hour commute every day to get to the conference, hour and a half. So I say something and my editor-in-chief says, well, I thought it was in Venice. So now I'm really confused. And the bottom line was the resort that I booked us at was the correct one where the conference was because it was not Naples. I did not go to Naples. I went to Port Charlotte. I think my editor was a little bummed that she didn't get to go to Venice. But the bottom line was I have never stayed in Port Charlotte. I have been through it many times. I have stayed at Matt Lachey, Pine Island. I have been to Sanibel, been to Captiva, been to Fort Myers, but I've never stayed in Port Charlotte. And I had a wonderful time. So I thought maybe we should focus on that general area this week. And obviously we've talked about this. You don't show up for the podcast and get surprised. Here's what we're talking about. But I thought it would be kind of an interesting area of the state to just spend maybe 30 minutes talking about some of the cool stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff around this. So where exactly is Port Charlotte? Because I know where Charlotte Harbor is.
That is Port Charlotte. Just think of it as not Naples and not Venice, but somewhere in between.
Okay. So we're talking Warm Mineral Springs, which is in Northport. We're talking Punta Gorda, that area. Is it Punta Gorda or Punta Gordon?
I say Punta Gorda, but I believe in Spanish it would be Punta Gorda. So, and that I just butchered that. So, but yeah, it should be the long U.
So now, Cape Coral, is that considered part of your geographical area, Port Charlotte?
Well, sort of. I mean, everything, if we're talking about how we get there, everything's a little bit farther because you do have to. So for those of you playing the home game who do not have Google Maps in front of you, picture Tampa Bay. And then you go home or you go south to Sarasota. South of Sarasota is Venice. Then to get to Port Charlotte, you have to go inland, which 75 unfortunately takes you. You go past Warm Mineral Springs and then just a little bit past that is Port Charlotte. But you're actually pretty far inland compared to, say, Manasota Key or Venice Beach because there is Port Charlotte is a nice, robust body of water, Charlotte Harbor. So Port Charlotte is slightly, very slightly southeast of Warm Mineral Springs. And then if you continued on 41 south and followed 41, you could go down to Fort Myers, and then you'd head west again to get to Boquilla, Matt Lachey, and I believe Cape Coral, which I used to work with a woman. Yeah, Cape Coral is halfway between, say, Pine Island and US 41 in Fort Myers. So it's this big harbor that has all this cool stuff around it, but it's not easy to get to. If you were a duck, very quick. Eagle, not a problem. Human being in a car dealing with rush hour traffic, it's going to take a little longer. Did that help?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things that I got messed up in my book, and I didn't know that until, what's the guy's name? He's coming on our show. He did the book about all the developers in the 1960s.
Jason Vick?
Something like that.
Not Jason Vick. Yeah, I'll figure it out.
He pointed out that the town of Northport, where Warm Mineral Springs started out, is Northport, Charlotte. Had I known
that. Well, that makes sense.
That's why it's two words, Northport. It is incorrect in my book. I'm just outing myself as having a major typo because all the millions of proofers who looked at my book didn't catch that and have Northport as one word. And it started as Northport, Charlotte.
Don't get me started. That is such a small error.
It drives me crazy, though.
I listened to the audiobook of Florida Spectacular because I felt like I should. And when you hear somebody reading your words back to you, it becomes apparent when you've overused a word, or there was one point I'm like, oh my God, did I write that? I'm not sure it's true. It's, let's not go down that road.
Yeah. I was limited by how many times I could say salubrious. I think six was what I agreed on with one of my editors because, you know, all the advertising, that's what they talked about, the salubrious water. So, okay, we're going to stop talking about our books and start talking about a very interesting part. You know, the thing about Northport is it's one of the fastest growing areas in the country. And the first time I went, I think it was 2011 or something. And my last visit was probably last year. And in that time, it has changed so much. That whole area is just blowing up with growth.
I mean, it's a beautiful, you know, we have this human thing that we do. It's a beautiful part of the state. And it's unfortunately, we kill what we love. I hate to say that, but we do.
The key is, you know, what you can salvage. You know, can you take care of green areas? So I got involved with some of the advocacy groups trying to preserve parts of Northport. And there's one group that tries to save a lot at a time. You know, there's all these empty lots and, you know, because they have a lot of gopher tortoises running around, and they just look at like little micro projects to try and save these lots from development. And I love that because if you look at the Google map, all you see is roads, you know,
well,
all you see is development.
You know, it's hard because you want to think the way to save everything is these grand sweeping gestures. But at the end of the day, it's not. It's these little projects. It's the councilwoman in my city who's gotten some money to do a little rain garden. You have to look at it that way.
It's your backyard. Honestly, that's why I'm a big, you know, Chad said it best. You know, he's not creating, you know, a yard. He's creating habitat. And, you know, I think that's the way everybody should look at it. It's my crusade.
I mean, that's a wonderful way to look at it. I have, was joking with some of my friends last night that I have become the woman who watches birds. I am fascinated with the Merlin app. I now have an AI bird feeder. And I have three separate bird feeders out. And one of them, I admit, is for the jays and the songbirds and things like that. One of them, I see a lot of doves and crows, and I am trying to train a crow. I'll let you know how that goes. And one of them, I get rats at, and I don't mind. And my friends, well, you're feeding rats. How can you do that? I said, because they're part of the food chain. We need them. I mean, you know, it's habitat. You know, I've got snakes. I've got birds of prey. I need the rats. I mean, not a popular thing to say. I understand. People don't love that. But
No. I remember one of my neighbors saying she was cleaning up her lakefront. And, you know, I was like, so what are you doing? She's like, oh, because all the moccasins would hide there. And it's like, Kathy, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, you just went away. Your picture went away.
I'm sorry. I'm here.
Okay. Anyways, she thought that the moccasins would be everywhere if she didn't clean up everything. And I've yet to see the first moccasin in my backyard.
Those snakes really want nothing to do with you. Like, I think we think some people, there's this perception that these venomous snakes just go along their day slithering around looking for things to bite. And I have no scientific proof of this, but I would imagine logic stands to dictate that takes energy. I don't care how beautifully muscled they are, but coiling, striking, attacking, exuding venom, that's energy. That's cortisol. Like, I think they're just as happy when they don't have to do it. I don't think they're running around like a serial killer with some compulsion. I think they just kind of want to be left alone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, most animals, you know, it's fight or flight. And they, to stay alive, they have to be afraid of things that could hurt them or kill them. So, you know, they're afraid of us, and they don't, you know, if you trap them, they're going to have to fight to get away, but that's what they don't want to mess with.
And they don't have legs.
They don't have legs. And they're remarkable. Right. If you're able to get over the fear and just observe them, they are remarkable. And we Absolutely. Weren't going to talk about snakes at all.
I know, but they're some of my favorite things.
I'm just looking at the map of this place, and it is so interesting because parts of it look like a computer chip, because they've created all this network of canals that are just, in some ways, it's like Aboriginal art because it's so intricate, but in other ways it's just, and it's so interesting as well, because, you know, some of the original inhabitants of that area, the Colusa, you know, created canals in that part of the of Florida, but what we've done is kind of over the top.
Well, I look at, and I guess we're gonna have to do a screenshot of the map since we're talking about it, but look at all the green areas north and east.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still, and that's Myakka River State Park. That's, yeah, you know, it's some great stuff. So
yeah,
there's still.
And I'm happy to say, you know, I've been involved with Warm Mineral Springs. They are trying to connect it to a nature trail that connects to some of those areas, which would be wonderful because, you know, that whole spring was originally developed to be kind of an amenity to sell houses there. And it is fascinating to go back there because I don't think it was ever that successful. And the houses are mostly very modest. And at this point, they're looking quite dated. And there's still empty lots in between some of the homes. But at that area, like I said, I think the Atlanta Braves trained down there now. They built this giant stadium complex. And so it's weird because, like in a lot of places in Florida, you get this kind of old Florida and new Florida butting heads with each other. So I went down there one time and stayed at a chain motel right on 41. But I've also stayed at the Warm Mineral Springs Motel, which was this wonderful mid-century modern place designed by the architect whose name is Victor Lundy, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
well, we'll
amazing.
Put a link to that in the show notes. Is it still open?
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's not 5-star, I'll say that.
I mean, I don't think I need it to be 5-star. Their hotel is definitely home, or their website is definitely homegrown.
Yes.
I'm looking at it now. They have an AOL address, which, you
says
know,
you a lot.
It says a lot. We joke in the office that AOL and Yahoo addresses are the bane of our existence because the emails never go through. But I mean, it is old Florida. It definitely
is
old Florida. They open what, 58? And I mean, it was like a place to go. You're right. And they have some great, great imagery.
Yeah, it was in Life magazine. They had a photographer from Life come out and it won all these architectural awards. It's extremely fantastic mid-century architecture. It's been adapted over the years and they had a fire too. So it's not in the best of shape. But, you know, the county or the city of Northport is really invested in trying to make that area better. They're going to, you know, I was involved in advocacy, so they wouldn't knock down the buildings at the spring. So they are going to fix them up to some extent. So that area has potential.
I like South Florida. I get a little itchy the closer we get to Naples. But I do think, you know, that north part, Northport is kind of a neat place. I do, I have an article I want to link to in the show notes from Southern Living. And it's all about Northport, Florida, and it was just published in July, and it says this Florida city is not is known for its aquatic adventures, but it's not on the coast, and it's things to do in Northport. And it's all water things, and it's, you know, go for a paddle, go to warm mineral springs, get a fishing boat, go to Myakka State Forest, watch spring training. They have an aquatic center. They talk about the pool because the Northport Aquatic Center, this is so funny, Rick, a little cultural appropriation here. They have a zero depth entry pool, water slides, and they have a lazy river that is called the Relaxahatchee. So,
Kind of like that though. I'm
yeah, I
sorry.
mean, yeah, I get it.
All
But they
that,
have.
so the first time I went, that all that stuff didn't exist, you know, where that aquatic center, because like some of these places that are really just developments and then become cities, they didn't really have a commercial hub other than 41. So they've added all this infrastructure that's kind of between 41 and 75. And the first time I went there, it was just like, you know, driving through the woods, and now it's just development after development. But they had to kind of give the town a focal point, I think is what they tried to do.
Well, you would hope it would have been the springs, but you know what I like about it, and I like it this from a very pragmatic point of view, it is very urbanized or suburbanized, I guess.
Yes.
But Myakka River State Park is right there, and Myakka River is the state park is just a complete gem, I think. It really is in the crown of Florida's many, many, many state parks. It's a
Yeah,
gem because it's
we need to
huge.
link to the show we did with John O. Miller, who talked about that.
Definitely.
And that was I that whet my appetite to go. I'll probably wait till it cools off a little bit, but I definitely want to paddle and explore there. I mean, the whole Myakka just looks, you know, when you're looking at a map, spectacular. But you know, Northport's a big body of water, isn't it? I mean, I'm sorry, Charlotte Harbor.
It is much bigger than you think because when you drive over it, say most people are going to drive over it on 75, a small portion of people are going to drive over it on 41. Unless you actually boat it, you go over Charlotte Harbor, which, what is that? The Peace River, I think.
Yeah, Peace River is right there.
Okay, so that's your glimpse, and it's actually on 75. It's kind of inland from the harbor itself. So you go over the Peace River. If you're on 41, you're a little bit closer to the harbor. And then you don't see water again on 75 till you cross the Caloosahatchee in Fort Myers. Is that the Caloosahatchee? Yes, it is the
Yeah,
Caloosahatchee. I'm going
yeah.
off memory here. But so we stayed, and actually, this is funny. When I initially saw this hotel, I'm like, oh, it looks gigantic. We're going back just for fun for a few days because it is on Charlotte Harbor. It is beautiful breezes and good food, so we're going to go hang out there. But it, you know, that gives you a better idea of the scope of Charlotte Harbor. There's a hotel right there, and you can look out, and you can realize when you're looking at it, you only see a little bit of the harbor because it has all these inlets and, you know, nooks and crannies and all this stuff, all these tributaries that run off of the harbor. I mean, the Myakka River empties into it, the Peace River empties into it, and it's this whole, it's called Gasparilla Sound, Charlotte Harbor, but it's this whole body of water that's, you know, it's so important to the health of the Gulf because as we urbanize some of these areas, as we get more housing developments, as we get more giant hotels that I'm going to stay at, there's a cost, right? So there's some runoff, even if it's just the cars traveling, there's petrochemical runoff. There's, as you know, fertilizer, pesticide, herbicide, fungicide runoff. And the harbor, there's some filtration as it passes through these tributaries, through the mangroves, before it gets out to the Gulf. So, I mean, it's an important body of water. And it's, you know, it's just massive compared to some of the other bodies of water you stay at inland. So, if you, for example, were to go to, and I'm looking on the map now, if you were to go stay in the Kissimmee chain of lakes, you would see some water but it's not going to be this massive body of water that you see here. And it's not, it's brackish, right? It's a mixture of the fresh water and the salt and all that. And it's, if you look at it on a map, it's almost as big as Tampa Bay, but it doesn't get nearly the attention.
No. And I think it's, you know, in my estimation, a lot of retirees, a lot of people who, you know, came from other places to live their Florida dream in that part of Florida, you know, it's not as wealthy as Naples. I think it's kind of a low key kind of area. And I think a lot of it is public lands, you know, that Babcock Ranch is down there. And I think it's kind of just a recent development boom that has added to a lot of that. There's a lot of great history there too. When I was doing my first book, I spent a lot of time in Punta Gorda looking up hidden Ponces, because there's no evidence for sure where Ponce de Leon landed on the Gulf Coast, but historically it's always believed that he sailed up Charlotte Harbor, and that's where he encountered the Calusas and the Calusas, and that's where he was mortally wounded. You know, that's where he tried to establish a colony on a second expedition. So there is a lot of what I like to call Poncebilia in Punta Gorda, and there's a big statue to him. There's this thing called the Royal Order of Ponce de Leon Conquistadors, I think. It's like this group that dresses up like Ponce every year, and they join in parades. And so they have erected this big statue of Ponce, and then there's this teeny little one in Ponce de Leon Park that my wife and I call Little Ponce, because it was just this like 4-foot statue. And that's an interesting place too. I like Punta Gorda. It has a very cool vibe. Cute little downtown. There's this Fountain of Youth well there that was created in the 1920s. The water that comes out there is radioactive. So
what?
There's a big warning sign on it.
Where is this?
It's in downtown Punta Gorda, Punta Gorda.
I'm Googling radioactive water.
Yeah, there's a,
I've never heard that.
Yes, it'll come up. So there are people who still bring jugs, fill it up, and they let it sit out so the radioactivity dissipates.
Radioactive Fountain of Youth. Well, that's kind of the opposite of what we want in a Fountain of Youth.
Yeah, it's naturally radioactive too. There's something down there in the aquifer where it comes from that makes it radioactive.
And I like that we still have a tap. I'm looking at this sign. We still have a tap that you can fill jugs with, but the Florida Health Department has put a sign up. Use water at your own risk. The water from this well exceeds the maximum contaminant levels of radioactivity as determined by the US EPA under the Safe Water Drinking Act. So, but we're not going to shut it down.
No, no. And so many people would fill up their jugs there, the tap handle would wear out and they had to constantly replace it. Now it could be because the radioactivity was eating the metal, but they used to say it's because it got used so much. And they, you know, it's one of the interesting places. I didn't write about it a lot in my first book. I kind of stuck a picture and a caption in there, I think, but it's fascinating. It dates back to the 1920s. They really leaned into the myth of Ponce de Leon. And one of the things that attracted me to that was because our whole perception changed with the Spanish conquistadors. You know, in the early 20th century, they were like kind of rock stars, and, you know, we treated them as celebrity endorsers. And now we realized, hey, we're maybe good guys, and backed away. So it's kind of like a treasure hunt to find vestiges of the, you know, mid to early 20th century where Ponce still exists.
Well, okay. So this Royal Order, what is it? Royal Order of Ponce de Leon Conquistadors. If you look at their website, they are still...
They're still around.
I mean, they're not saying this guy was a bastard son of a bitch. They're like,
no.
During the last several years, members have spread the history of Ponce de Leon and his accomplishment to area schools. I mean, they may as well just say, we support colonialism. Yay. This is... and of course they have golf, just as Ponce did. They have golf. You know, I understand.
You know, it's a thing for retirees it's an excuse. You know, it's like any of those old fraternal orders where they get together and drink and play golf and just hang out. You know, they somehow glommed onto that. And That's their thing. They get to dress up at march and parades. I met one of the guys. They were shooting a documentary, and I drove all the way down there and, spent the day talking to a guy on camera, and it never saw the light of day. That's actually twice I've gone to that area for documentaries, and one of them was produced, and one of them I don't think ever saw the light of day. And one of the guys was from the Ponce de León Order of Royal Order of Conquistadors, or
The
whatever they're called.
only way I could endorse this, Rick, is if we have the tribal order of the Miccosukee and Seminole and Calusa who meet the conquistadors on the golf course and be like, "All right, buddy, you see if you can go bogey bogey par par. Meanwhile, we're just going to go ahead and get some Machineel-tipped arrows and make sure you don't get to the 18th hole." That is how you really make it interesting. But you didn't ask me.
It's just Florida. It's just, it's the wacky thing. It's, it's right on par with, golf courses at the villages. It's just one of those weird things, and people direct, having these fancy golf carts that look like cars and stuff. It's just Florida. And there are murals in the town. There are stories that the conquistadors used to hunt with dogs, that they would have dogs go after the native people. And there's a mural, if I re recall correctly, that shows, a mounted conquistador on horseback surrounded by these dogs that, it's like, you do realize how cringy that is. And I'm not sure they did.
I think we need to change the subject or else I'm gonna
She's gonna
use the
keep
rest
getting triggered. Well, so what else did
of
you find in your little visit to Port Charlotte? Did you get a chance to go out and see cool stuff in the town, or were you busy with the conference the
No,
whole time?
it was the kind of thing, get up for breakfast. There was breakfast with everybody, and then by the time I was done, I think one night we went and did trivia, but by the time they were done with the trivia, I was falling asleep at the we sat around a corner of the bar and did trivia, and I was just like putting my head down on the table. But so I stayed at the Sunseeker Resort, which is right on
Oh, I see
Charlotte,
it.
Charlotte Harbor on the Peace River before you go down to Punta Gorda and the Charlotte area. So it was the views that got me. Like it was just, and it is a big resort, which apparently it's a nice thing for locals because they have something like seven restaurants, a steakhouse, an oyster bar,
Holy
so the locals,
cow.
it was more than I expected. They've got a spa, a gym, but a lot of the rooms just look right out over Charlotte Harbor. And that just to me, I am such a sucker for going to, as much as I like to travel and explore and see things, I am such a sucker for going to a nicer hotel where you have a balcony and you can sit in the morning and drink your coffee and look out over the salt water or the brackish water, as it were. And then at night, sit out there and watch. Feel the breeze and watch the boats go by. It was just really nice. And I kind of need that downtime right now. But there's and one of the things I complained about is the pool bar. They have a rooftop pool with a bar and you have to agree to spend so much money or pay for a chair, but it doesn't allow kids. And I know that makes me sound like a horrible person, but I have a fundamental issue with children in swimming pools, and that's all I'll say. So
It looks spectacular, actually. I would
it's
love to go
nice. I
down
mean,
there.
it's a big development on the water, so I know there's some environmental cost to that. But on the other hand, it's nice to see a place that the locals can go to and it satisfies the needs. I'm not naive enough to think it's going to keep them from building more restaurants in the area, but to have it consolidated like that is nice.
And there's the Charlotte Harbor Preserve State Park. I have never even heard of that state park.
I think this one we might have to leave the resort because there's some things that I'm interested in seeing that I've never explored before. I've spent time south and north, but and I've definitely spent time on the Peace River, but not at the mouth of the Peace River.
Have you ever done the fossil, where you go and find shark teeth and stuff on the Peace River? I've always wanted to do that. How far away is that from? That's way up further north
That
by Arcadia,
where
right?
I go when I do that, I'm looking at the map to give you an idea. Basically, you go to Arcadia. So
Okay.
you would take 75 to is that 70?
17. That's good up to 17.
Yeah, you take, well, I would take 75 to 70 from where I am. You would take 17. Okay. And you go to Arcadia, and you can see, if you look at any Google map, you can see where the Peace River runs. And there's right before you get right west of Arcadia proper, there is on 70 a little park where you can put in. And it's not hard. I mean, I have taken people down there. When I used to be a kayak tour guide, we had a kayak club. We brought them down there. I've taken friends down there. It's really not hard. One of the only times I've seen snakes in the water was there, but it was not a venomous snake. It was really weird. Just the snake kind of hanging out under the water looking at us. And I'm like, okay, buddy, what's going on with you? Didn't think you liked being down there. But it was a hot day, so.
You brought it back to snakes. You were able to. Oh, there's a thing on the map that says Florida hog hunting.
Well, yes, that's their problem there. Hogs are not native, and they are fairly destructive. You do not want to run into one in the wild. But yeah, the Peace River, it's absolutely a beautiful paddle. The only thing I would caution you is there have been times where I've put in at the 70 park on the Peace River, and I think it was a weekend. There were people with ATVs in the river, which was, to me, not why I go on a river. Like, I don't even want to be in the salt water when there's a jet ski around. I get angry at cigarette boats, but I am really a cranky get off my lawn or get off my natural Florida landscape type of person. So if it doesn't bother you, then, you know, go anytime. But I always recommend, if you can, paddle these waterways during the week, you know, Monday through Thursday, absolute best time.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I think about that when I'm on the water. There are really two different kinds of energies. You know, there's the motorboat energy, which is like go fast. And, you know, it feels good in some ways. I went on an airboat ride on the St. John's and I loved it. You know, we're going fast and we're going everywhere. We're driving on land. You know, we're seeing all this stuff. Guys like chasing down birds and all that kind of stuff. It was fun. But it's a completely different kind of energy when you paddle. You know, you have that connection to nature that you don't have when a motor is involved. And it's more, it seems like it's less about dominating the landscape and more about being in alignment with it, perhaps.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's disturbing to the wildlife when there's cacophony and loudness and things like that. You're just like fireworks tend to scare away wildlife. So do these other loud noises. So
do you like it? Have you been on an airboat ride, right?
Yes.
Did you like it?
It is a little bit of a thrill. I don't have the problem with them a lot of people have, because I see a function for them. Just like jet skis, initially, I believe their purpose was to go get surfers who had a crisis. Airboats are wonderful after a hurricane. Airboats are great for getting to places to do litter cleanups that regular boats can't get to, that aren't easy to swim or paddle out to. Airboats have a purpose. I mean, I think they have a definite purpose in the Glades historically. Am I glad I've been on one? Yes. Do I think it should be our primary thing that tourists do? I wouldn't say that. But I think that it's important to understand they are not the enemy. They are a different tool we have in our toolbox to surviving in some wilder parts of Florida.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, because I have been giving some thought to when the drawdown occurs and we're able to have some trips in the Ocklawaha. And I really think you need both modalities. You need the motorized water vehicles, you know, like pontoon boats. Some people would take John boats. You don't see jet skis there. It's a little too.
No, that's, too I think it's, yeah, I think it's more of a saltwater thing.
Yeah. And so you need that, but you also like to have the connection. Because I've never kayaked in a drawdown. I've always been on a pontoon boat, and, you know, pontoon boats kind of the best of both worlds. You're not going fast, you're going slow, and you can stop and sit in one place and really soak up the nature and be completely comfortable. That's what a pontoon boat gives you. So it's good that we have both, I think.
I think that's a good ecumenical way of embracing all the things Florida's water activities have to offer. You're more balanced than I am, Rick.
Well, I mean, there's a side of me that resisted doing an airboat ride because I do love being on the water. There is a feeling I get when you first sit in a kayak, when you're on the water, that's like, it's an emotional, connection to that water. And I feel it every single time I sit in a kayak, and it's very different than sitting on an airboat. And I didn't want to like it, but I did like it. And, I got some wonderful photos. There's an area where we saw reflections of Cyprus, and the wake would come out from the airboat and kind of jiggle the water and twist it. So the reflection was almost like a dolly painting where the trees got twisted. And I was looking at those last night and thinking that was a visual that I got because I had the perspective of being on an airboat.
I think my airboat experience, and I do want to share it, was there used to be a place in Chokoloskee called Totch's Airboat Rides, and it was run by Totch Brown's family. It's gone now. It's not owned by them anymore if it's still there. We went on an airboat ride. I was writing about it for a newspaper I worked for, newspaper I own now, as a matter of fact. And we went down, and they took us out, and there was a lot of things they did that were clearly tourist-driven. Like, we went through the canals, and it was one point where you're going down this mangrove canal, mangroves on either side, and you see another airboat coming straight at you, and you really, because these things don't have brakes, and they don't have reverse. You're like, they know that's there, right? They're going to hit. We're going to have a collision. And at the last moment, a canal opens up perpendicular to us, and both airboats veer off at a different side. Very thrilling, very touristy, little stress-inducing at the time. And then, of course, they take you out, like, well, we're going to see if we can find a gator, which in the Everglades is the most hysterical thing I can think of. That would be like going out in my backyard, and I'll say, let's see if we can find a lizard. So they do that, and I actually like gators quite a bit. That didn't scare me, but they are very massive and deserve respect down there. But what they did do that I thought was super cool is they took us out into took us out of the mangroves, and they had the airboat out there, and they took us out to what was Totch Brown's. He had a cabin on one of the islands, and they took us out and they let us walk around. And coming back, we're basically in the salt water, and you look back at the land, and you're in the 10,000 islands by Cape Romano, and you look, and all you see is mangroves, and this guy is heading straight for the land. And it's one of those things where you're like, crap, what's he going to do? Is he going to, you start to wonder, like, did this guy actually work for the airboat company, or is he just a guy with a death wish? And at the last minute, he turns the boat slightly, and all of a sudden, the trees open up, and you're on a canal. It's not a canal because it's not man-made. You're in one of the tributaries. And it really gave me a lot of appreciation for how the drug runners were able to so successfully evade the government, because that is just an absolute, intimate, beautiful understanding of the land. It really is. And no matter how you feel about drug running, whether it was a noble profession or a horrible thing, and I'll accept either answer, that level of, what did Totch Brown say? That the Everglades is always provided for me. I mean, we talked about being a plume hunter, running drugs. You basically, the Everglades is always provided. You get a sense of that. Like, if you are really good with the land, you will always be safe if you know what you're doing. And it really, I don't think I could have been impressed upon that. That couldn't have been impressed upon me with a kayak or a canoe or a slower moving vessel. And it wouldn't have been possible with a larger one. So it's kind of a weird lesson to take away, but wow, it was incredible. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. But again, we digress, as I so often do.
Well, I was looking at I've never done this before on a podcast because I it's an area I really want to explore more. And, I have limited experience with it. And there's a hiking area called Ragnarsson Loch. And I'm so intrigued by it. It's not too far from where you were staying.
It's very Swedish.
It's a Viking thing.
Do we have Vikings in Florida?
Ragnar Lodbrok was a Viking hero. So I don't know what's that all about. I can't find anything on it, but it shows it as a hiking area that's really almost due west of where you were.
I see it on the map.
Here's a hiking map.
Well, this is fascinating. Especially to all the people listening who can't see what we're looking at.
Yeah, so that I think the point is there are a lot of cool things to explore. There's a Ragnar trail run that they have.
Okay, you're going to have to send me some links here for people.
I'm so intrigued by that. There's a lot of intriguing places there. And I wonder if there's a place that does have airboat rides down there, because it does look like that would be a wonderful way to get around down there. Because it's just canal after canal after canal. You could get lost so many ways.
Well, that's a good place to get lost.
I suppose so.
And on that note, folks, please go to the show notes, because by the time you hear this, Rick will have given me some information to include on Ragnarsson Loch. You can go find your own Viking just north of the Everglades. On, of all places, Charlotte Harbor.
Yeah, it's cool. And, you know, we didn't even talk about Boqueilla and all those areas to the west of Cape Coral on Pine Island. And that's pretty close. But again, just a big body of water, lots of places to explore. I mean, I think that's the point we try and make, is there's so much good stuff in Florida still that, you know, we need to get out there, enjoy it while we can.
I mean, definitely. And, you know, it's not like you have to go very far. You know, this is, and we will have a picture of the Google map in the show notes, just so you can see what we're talking about.
How far is that from you to get to Port Charlotte?
80 minutes.
It's 2.5 hours for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's a short drive. That's one of the reasons we're going down for the weekend. You know, we'll make the Sunseeker our home base, spend a lot of time staring at the water, which, even though we live a mile from salt water, we don't get out there nearly enough. So this will be forced relaxation. And I'm hoping we'll get to go see the radioactive water. And if we get really energetic, I want to go out and see how Pine Island and Boqueilla is doing, because I love it there. If I was going to live anywhere else in Florida, I think it would be there. And that's a big statement for me to say.
Have you been to the bar at Cabbage Key? That's one of my
never.
My life list.
Never,
things.
Never, never.
Yeah, me too.
We should do a meetup.
Yep. We need a boat, though. You got to have a boat.
I have a boat, but it's only going to fit like me, you, Julie, Barry, and two other people. So people are going to have to find their own boats.
Okay.
On that note, we have some great, 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 great guests coming up for you in the coming weeks. So please, please, please feel free to check out the shows, subscribe, definitely pay attention. Next week, next episode, if you're listening in reverse, we are going to be talking to a man who has written a whole book about gators, and you're going to get to hear me talk about why gators are just sweet little swamp puppies that you should never cuddle. We've got some great authors coming up. We don't want to give too much away, but if you listen to Hulu, or if you watch Hulu, please check out Mr. and Mrs. Murder, because the author of the true crime story about that is going to be on the podcast. And Jason's going to be here. We're going to talk. I mean, there's just so much. How can you not love our podcast?
And if you know whether it's Punta Gorda or Punta Gorda, email Kathy.
Yep. Kathy at floridaspectacular.com. That's Kathy with a C, which you know by now, because I say that every episode. And as always, we want to thank our supporters. We haven't gotten a new supporter in a while, and that makes me sad. So if you've been thinking about it, you have the opportunity to make me happy. You have the power, listeners. But let's thank our other supporters, our regular supporters, Michael Gargalak, Ryan Worthington, John Bowne, Angela Connolly, Natalie Zachrick, Davita Breyer, Leslie Hallweg, Carol Miller, Elise Smith, Bet's Boys Adventure, Brian Woodall, Brad Sager, and Stephanie Hewley. We really appreciate our people who support us. And of course, we have to thank Sulcata Grove, who is not a subscriber per se, but they did send us their annual dues via PayPal, which you of course can do. Check it all out in the show notes, and you can find links to everything there. And we will see you next time on Florida Spectacular.
Bye.